Hello?
Yeah, I guess you're sharing your full screen. I can see the slides, but I can also see
Okay.
everything else on your desktop.
Well, my computer does not like this screen share thing.
Do you want us to share instead? One of us could share if you feel comfortable.
Wait, I think it's okay, my screen share just stopped. And my computer went into very low resolution mode. Maybe let me try this again. Okay. Right. Hopefully that's working now. Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go then.
Yes.
Okay,
Perfect.
wait, let's move. I need to minimize the Zoom window. All I see is my big face right now. Okay, here we go. So my talk is, or talk and workshop is, oh, that is the old title that somehow, okay, anyway, the new title, Fathoming Our Carbon Footprint Through Art. Sorry, this is from an old presentation. Okay, so a brief introduction is not super necessary because I just got introduced by Jan, but basically, yeah, this is kind of the summary of who I am. If you want to know more, you can just scan the QR code that goes to my website, and I won't bore you with that right now. So let's go on to the next slide, and I can tell you about this really cool project that I'm working on. So I am a member of Green Labs Austria, and I'm a visiting artist at ISTE, that's the Institute of Science and Technology Austria. And there's a really cool sustainability group initiative at ISTE, and they basically said, hey, we're looking for an artist to do something with all of our plastic lab waste that we're just throwing away because there aren't any recycling options. And we want to recruit someone to do something with it to raise awareness and get people interested in helping make research more sustainable. So, yeah, I just happened to be in the right spot at the right time, and I partnered with them and started making things like this nitrile glove dress. So we kind of had some general goals when we started doing this project, which was to at the very minimal level, rescue at least some plastic from the incinerator. So I know this isn't like super relevant for a lot of the high energy physics research, but I'm just gonna give this presentation as I used to give it. This is just like as a result of single-use plastics being used a lot in life science research. There's just it accumulates a lot, and we're just trying to rescue a little bit from getting trashed. And our second goal was to yeah, use it to raise awareness, give people something exciting to look at, and go like, oh, I want to learn more. And then our third goal was to inspire people to actually do something about it and not just get excited for the cause. So yeah, that's how this project got started and why we're doing it. And so the question is, why did we choose art? So there are plenty of other methods for raising awareness, and we try to use them on, or we, before I got to ISTE, they were using a lot of these methods to try to engage the community and get them interested. But I'm going to go over a few of the shortcomings of these strategies that they were using. So the first is that there's often a lot of complex data, charts, graphs, and this is kind of for some people, it can be boring and it can kind of be a little bit incomprehensible, and they're like, ah, numbers. So that can be a kind of a hurdle that people have to jump over in order to get involved in sustainable research. And so another problem kind of related is that people might just not be able to like grasp like just how much plastic is being consumed, just how much energy they're using. So again, maybe too many numbers, too many graphs and datas. And then it's another huge problem is that it's often kind of like a like an apocalyptic message and kind of like guilt trippy, like, oh, you shouldn't do research because you're using so much plastic. And that's really not the message that we want to send. We want people to get excited about what they could do for the environment. And the kind of actually maybe the biggest problem that we faced at the Institute is that it can sometimes be just a lot of effort for people to join the cause. They go like, oh, that looks like a lot of work. I have to focus on my research. So, how does art solve these problems or address these problems? So, here are some of the strengths of using art to raise awareness for sustainability. So, the first one is that art is interesting and it's nice to look at, or in the case of like music, it's nice to listen to. My goal as an artist is to send a clear message that doesn't need a whole lot of text and numbers and data to look at in order to understand the problem and to understand the solution. So, I mean, you do need to know all these the data and the numbers, but it's kind of like a gateway, a little thing to get people interested enough to look at the data. Another huge benefit of art is that a sculpture, for example, can help people visualize the actual physical mass of the waste that's getting generated. In the case of single-use plastics in labs, they can just see this pile of trash and go, ah, that's what 100 kilograms of plastics is, what it looks like. And instead of this kind of sad, gloomy message that, yeah, we're kind of not in a good spot, we are trying to say, hey, we were in a bad spot and we're getting out. So we're trying to communicate a hopeful message, an optimistic message of where we can go from here. And lastly, art is a great way to kind of get scientists involved in the creation process. And it's I mean, as an artist, I'm like, oh, free art supplies. So it's great for me. It's really a win-win situation. So yeah, these are kind of the reasons that we chose art as an innovative approach to get people to do sustainable science. Okay. Sorry, my screen share is this toolbar is blocking me. I want to click somewhere else. Okay. Anyway, I will figure this out. So in the beginning, when I first joined the Institute, the basic scenario that was there was that people who were already interested, people who, sorry, the people who are doing this sustainability stuff, like people who are attending the events, the lectures, and participating in the recycling programs, they were people who are just like already interested in sustainability. And the problem was that they couldn't get other people to be interested in the cause. They were just doing their own thing on the side and casually trying to do a little bit of outreach, posts on social media, like, hey, we have a thing, but no one was getting excited about it. And another problem was that there was this general attitude that I'm a scientist, I'm at work, and now I'm in work mode. And even though these same scientists are recycling at home, they're turning off the lights when they're not using it. They don't take that attitude with them to the lab. So we were trying to change that. And oh, there we go. So as a pilot project, the first art project I did with the ISTA Sustainability Group was so we collected a bunch of polystyrene waste, which we didn't recycle at the Institute. We were recycling PET, HDPE, and polypropylene, I think. Anyway, we're recycling some plastics and not others. So we decided, okay, let's target the ones that aren't being recycled and draw people's attention to it, make something really pretty out of it, get people excited. And so I made these chandeliers. And so this one on the left is made from serological pipettes. And these are from like cell culture or tissue culture. experiments, but we only collected the ones that were not biologically contaminated. So these are often used to simply measure water when they're making like a salt solution or something. And it so these have to be sterile when they're used. And so you can't just reuse them a bunch. They are single-use plastics. But the sad thing is that they can't get recycled afterwards because they can't join the consumer waste stream. So, and then the one on the right is made of petri dishes. Actually, I have more slides showing details on them, so I will talk about them later. Okay, so this first one is made of 272 pipettes, and we only had 9 participating scientists. So at the time when we started the project, it was pretty small. People didn't really know about it. So we had 9 participating scientists, and we collected these pipettes over 1 month, which is only about 1 to 2 pipettes per day per person. So this seems like not a very massive amount of consumption, but keep in mind that these scientists are probably using about 10 times the amount that we can't use for the project because they were touching some biological material. And so those are a different biohazard category. So the institute does actually consume a lot of these. And we just wanted to kind of give people a little bit of an idea of how much the institute is using. So the next thing that we did was, well, actually, after the pipette chandelier and the petri dish chandelier, people got really interested in the project, and so we did another one, another project, and now we had 6 labs instead of just 9 scientists who are participating, and we put out these little collection boxes that said, "Hey, we're doing an art project," and then people were like, "Oh, wow! I didn't know that this was a thing," but they were really excited, and they contributed their used gloves, again, non-toxic, non-biohazard gloves, and so that dress that we saw like a few slides ago, that's made from about 400 used gloves, and you know what? I'm going to play the video, because it actually, I think, says it a lot more quickly than I can. Okay, so yeah, basically that's the idea. We're trying to just show people how much 400 gloves looks like, and I think the dress has kind of successfully done that. And that video was actually made for Instagram, so these short 1 minute clips that fit in with people's ever shortening attention spans. It seems to be a really effective way to kind of spread the word. So, yeah, that was the pilot project that we did. And can I go to the next slide? Nope. Oh, I don't want to play the video again. Hold on. Ah, there we go. Okay. So then we kind of tried to do a little bit more outreach besides just the Instagram post. So there was a, I presented the chandeliers and, well, I'm wearing the dress, but we kind of did a little mini exhibition on campus to try to get more people to look at the stuff. And so yeah, I think this was a pretty successful pilot project. We saved about 2 point almost 3 kilograms of plastic. I'm not sure. Okay, it's not just polystyrene. The nitrile gloves are not polystyrene. So we rescued a little bit of plastic. We got a bunch of new scientists interested in participating in future projects. And also we got a bunch of non-scientists interested, like some of the admin, the staff members at ISTO were also like, oh, wait, what can I do to help? So that was really cool. We managed to, yeah, kind of build a little community. Okay. And then we even took this a step further. So I wore the dress to the Vienna Ball of Sciences in 2024, and the ball organizers actually said, hey, do you want to come back and be part of the official ball program for next year? And I was like, wow, yeah, I do, of course. So yeah, I made a second dress out of pipettes, and then they said, yeah, we'll have like a solo exhibit set up for you. And so there was like a whole display and everything with my chandeliers and a little info QR code that people could scan and find out more about the project. And it was a little like a photo op. So people, yeah, shared it on social media, which is exactly what we wanted. And then, as another huge success, we were able to network with some local politicians and also the local media. I think this is an interview with, I can't remember the TV station. There's a TV station that did a little interview, a little feature. And so this is really important because making science, scientific research sustainable is not just about getting the scientists involved. It's about creating like a whole infrastructure and convincing the entire society that we need to make this a priority. So that's where these politicians and policymakers really kind of become necessary. Those are the people who are going to say, yeah, we need to budget for the recycling programs and make new allowances and regulations for artists to work with scientists and handle lab waste. I'm kind of in a special position where I was a scientist, and now I can go to a lab and say, like, hey, I know what I'm doing. I'm not gonna like biologically contaminate myself. So yeah, give me your petri dishes. But I feel like that's kind of a barrier for many artists who want to get into this kind of work. So yeah, that was it was. It's great that we got this opportunity to connect with this outside of the science community. And of course, there are a bunch of scientists at the ball because it's the Ball of Sciences. So that was exactly our target audience. Wait, did this video already play? Okay. Let me see if I can move forward. Ah, okay, good. So now the big question is, did we get any actual action? So we definitely got people's attention. People got really excited. They shared our stuff on social media. We got the attention of policymakers. Now, do we see any follow-up on that, or do they just get excited and forget about us? So we're going to go into that. We did a little bit of a follow-up on our study group, I guess. We followed up with the participating scientists. With like a little email survey and said like, hey, what do you think about the project? How do you feel about your plastic consumption? And these are some of the responses that we got emailed back. So this is like totally not a controlled study or anything. This was just a super casual, like I said, pilot project. So, but anyway, we have these anecdotal testimonials. So one person said it was so much fun. And more rewarding to collect the plastics for a cause instead of, oh yeah, I got to do this duty and put it in the right recycling bin. They're like, oh, I need to sort my trash so that it can become a cool thing. So, some people were made more aware of how much plastic they were using, which is kind of exactly one of the goals that we had. People got excited to follow the progress on Instagram, which shows that they have a continued commitment and interest in the project. They didn't just get initially interested and forget about it. many of the participants were just glad to have their waste upcycled. And this one I think is really important. We had some users say that they were kind of sad when the when we stopped collecting like the gloves, for example, and they said, I was so hopeful because I thought we could keep doing this and keep recycling or upcycling this plastic, but now I don't have any option but to throw it straight in the trash. So this was like a about the polystyrene, which the Institute doesn't recycle. So they were really bummed when we stopped collecting those petri dishes. And actually, it was that very lab that switched to glass petri dishes after the project ended. So so this is really kind of proof, even though it's just a pilot project, it's proof that art can change hearts enough to get them to do to have a real change. So, and keep in mind that the people who ch switched over to the glass petri dishes, they were already kind of like the tree hugger. They were one of the most eco-conscious labs in the institute already. And I mean, they were one of the few who participated in the collection of the petri dishes for the chandeliers. And even though they were already kind of eco-conscious, they didn't make the switch to glass petri dishes until after this project. So yeah, I think this is really kind of that magic extra boost that they need to really take action. So this is kind of just a summary slide of all the things I said. So art is a useful tool for raising awareness and increasing enthusiasm and participation in sustainable lab practices. So as a recap of those things I just said, those participating scientists were personally vested. They had like a commitment to the project because I think one of them said that, oh, it's a co-creation. Like they feel like even though they're not the artist, they feel like they're part of the creation of the project, which they are. Some scientists became more aware of their own plastic consumption, and they are also now actually having more conversations about the topic of recycling. So these were some of the questions that they started asking, and it didn't even cross their mind before. So we got people talking. And yeah, we're continuing to do this. We're starting to sort our autoclave waste, and I think it's been kind of a high effort project for some scientists. So I'm hoping that our next project will encourage them to sort their autoclave waste and find that it's actually not that high of an effort. So that's the end of my first part of the talk, which is just on the stuff that I have done, the art that was made from the biological waste, from the life science waste. And now we're gonna go into the HEP stuff. So this is now I can't see. Let's see this toolbar. Okay, so art for HEP. So unlike with the life sciences, there's not like a huge consumption of things like nitrile gloves, petri dishes, etc. So we're mainly gonna focus on some other aspects like scope 3 emissions or well actually also scope 1 emissions. Anyway, we're gonna focus on the less tangible waste, mainly the energy consumption used associated with a high energy physics research. So today we have a little workshop that will hopefully help y'all visualize your carbon footprint or carbon emissions. And there's going to be a little part of this workshop that is going to result in some art that will actually be created, like in real life, not just virtually. So let's get started with that. So we are going to break out into three rooms. Hopefully this works. So depending on what your occupation is, scan the corresponding QR code with your phone or copy and paste that link, which I realize you can't just copy it, but that also works. Okay, please.
I will put the links in the chat.
Oh, thank you. Great. And maybe if Let's see if it works to split up the breakout rooms based on the poll results. Maybe it works now. So so the three options are people who are working with gas emissions. So that's what are they called? The hydrofluorocarbons, the cooling gases. And then people who are doing computational work, like the theoretical physics calculations and stuff. Sorry, I have like no technical vocabulary because I don't work in physics. And then the third bar QR code is for pretty much everyone else. So people who are working in facilities management, general science or non-science or non-physics.
So I think we're still waiting for 5 people to respond. And we have all the breakout rooms open. So if you have already responded, you can go into one of the breakout rooms.
Cool. So these for the people who are still in the main room, these are links to Google Documents that have like a little word problem. It's basically just going to ask you to do some calculations, and then we'll return to the main room and go over some of the answers, and we can share our answers.
Okay, so if I enter that HTTPS, I can get into that room. Is that right?
Yeah. Wait, no, hold on.
How does it work? Sorry.
No, so these breakout rooms at the bottom,
Yeah,
dock.
I want. Yeah, the one I'm interested in mainly is gas emissions. So
So
if
you
I.
can join that room.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So the HTTPS that link will just take you to the Google document that has the little workshop question on it. But in order to join the breakout room, you need to, I think there's a button on the Zoom toolbar.
Yeah, it should be at the bottom written breakout rooms. If you can't find it on your main dock, it's in more. So you can find it there and directly join one of the rooms you're interested.
Try.
I'm already seeing a lot of people joining the computational one. There's one person in the something else room.
Do you see me in the gas emissions room?
Not yet, but if you want, I can just assign
Can
you.
you do that? Because I'm not sure I'm getting in. I double clicked on it, but I'm not sure that I got into the room.
Yeah, okay.
Do I see that now? Oh.
Yes, I have moved you there. Right, so we have a few people. I see just Saki and the other organizers mainly, and Jie, who is one of the panelists, and Ben. So I guess Saki, if you want to jump into the room or you want me to move you to a room, let me know.
I will go to the something else room because there's only one person there.
Okay, and then probably one of us can go to the other rooms to
Okay.
essentially tell them
Sounds
to
good.
wait a bit
Yeah.
and read through the Google link.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, so it's gonna stop my screen share, but I'll restart when I come back.
Yeah. So, I guess if one of us goes into the computing one, And just tell them that, okay, Vasiliki is already there.
Yeah, I'll go check into something else room.
I am. I've just been jumping around different rooms.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. I was just saying, I'll take a look at the gas emissions one because there are so few people there.
Yeah, I checked into something else, but I feel like Tristan and Zoe are interacting more with Saki because there's much less folks there. Oh, gas emissions just has Greg and two of the
Yeah.
organizers.
But it was cool actually. I was talking to Tristan and Zoe, and none of them is a physicist.
Yeah,
So
okay.
Tristan is actually following Saki.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, and right now is it's midnight at his place. He's in Pacific time.
Wow, okay. But
And Zoe is a nature review science editor.
so we are getting more people from other places. That is really cool.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a
Okay.
surprise, but a pleasant one.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting everyone to be a physicist. So I guess something else was a good decision so that there was not just physics things that people can work in.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, actually, the other names, most of them I've seen them before,
Yeah,
and those
exactly.
are names of physicists.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't seen these names, so I was thinking maybe they're PhD students or something. They're very
Yeah.
new. But okay, that's cool.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I'm gonna jump into the something else and you can jump into gas emissions and see how it's going.
Yep. Okay. Oh, disappeared. Don't think I can reshare my screen. Can I? The breakup will just be leaving in a minute or so, but I think we have an idea of what was happening. So maybe I'll just go check the gas emissions. Ah, no, really. Okay.
Are we all back?
Yeah, everyone should be
I think
moving
everyone
back
should be
in
back.
60 minutes or so.
Okay. Welcome back, everyone. We're gonna go over the answers. I just realized we have like about 10 minutes left, so I'm gonna try to wrap this up really quickly, but it should be fun. Fun times. Here we go. Okay, so here are some just a really quick rundown of the answers if you want more details. If you really want to just see the math, you can email me. I'll just send you the solution. So for the first two groups, we had a calculation of converting some sort of carbon emissions into plastic water bottles. So just to show you the math for converting that complicated table with all of the carbon emissions into a bottle, here's the math. Basically, it's going to equate to 58 grams of carbon emissions per plastic water bottle. So that's going to be used for the next two calculations. Stop me if it's too fast. So for the gas emissions workshop, we asked you all to basically convert this 10,000 tons of CO2 equivalent emissions into plastic water bottles. So this is actually this is the amount of carbon emissions that CERN saved by recuperating this gas that usually gets leaked out and released into the atmosphere. So this is 10,000 tons, sorry, 10,000 tons of carbon emissions is equivalent to this many bottles, water bottles. And this workshop would not be complete without some silly art. So I unfortunately use ChatGPT, but here's a very cute and memorable thing. Hopefully, you will take it home with you. The bottles that would be equivalent to the carbon emissions of that were saved by CERN in 2023 is equal to a 34,000 km stretch of water bottles if you just stack them one on top of each other, and this would reach approximately a tenth of the way to the moon. And it is also equal to the mass of 12 very fat alpacas or llamas? No, alpacas. So next we have the computational physics question. So this was kind of a complicated question. Basically, you have a big computing job to run, and you have a choice of running them either at the at CERN, which has like a really high processing, or sorry, power usage efficiency effectiveness. What does that stand for? Power usage effectiveness. Sorry, not efficiency. So, sorry, a really. Well, let me backtrack. You can run it at CERN, which has an average, a pretty average PUE, or at the Leibniz Center, which has a really a low slash efficient power usage effectiveness. However, we should also consider that there is the grid emissions factor, which is what fuel source is providing their electricity. And then we should also take into account the processor efficiencies. So using that info, which was all provided to the computational group, calculate the number of water bottles you would have saved running it at the more efficient center. And the answer is, so at if you sent your job to the Leibniz Center, you would generate this many grams, kilograms of carbon emissions, and at CERN, it would be like a sixth of that. So, even though CERN has a slightly higher power usage effectiveness, it ends up being more eco-friendly to run your jobs there because France has a lot more renew not renewable. They run on nuclear, and Leibniz is running on partially fossil fuels. So this is equivalent to about 2,000-ish water bottles. And here's our art with the alpacas. So yeah, and it to help you visualize that a little bit more. If we had that many single-use water bottles, it would be if it's filled with water, it would be enough to hydrate a person, one human, for about 1.5 years, assuming that they're not drinking anything else. So this is a lot of water. And the amount of plastic in those bottles is would be equivalent to 27 kilograms, which is about that is not what I was going for, sorry. Kilograms. These two bullet points are reversed. The first one is the volume of, no, that's right. Sorry, t 27 kilograms of plastic. If you just compress all the plastic together, is the volume of hay that an alpaca would eat in about 5.5 months. All right, and then last one. We had a facilities management question. So suppose you are the person who gets to decide what kind of forks your cafeteria has. So how much carbon do you save switching from polystyrene disposable forks to PLA, derived from sugarcane? All right, and we're assuming that an employee uses one fork per day per workday. So we got a polystyrene fork has a carbon footprint, basically carbon emissions of 18 grams, and then a polylactic acid fork is about half that. And so you save about 8.8 grams of carbon emissions per fork that you switch over. And so this would be about 2 kilograms of carbon emissions saved per year per employee. So that really adds up quite quickly. And fun fact, if you switch to a metal fork instead, you can go look at this paper. You actually pay for the fork in terms of carbon emissions. It pays for itself after only 29 uses. So if your cafeteria can afford a dishwasher and someone to run it, which I think cafeterias already have, you should switch to metal forks for sure. And yeah, here we go. We're at like nearing the end of my time slot, so we're gonna kind of skip this really. But here's your cute alpaca art. And the last part of the workshop, which is probably the most fun part for me, is I'm actually going to make an art piece similar to this one that's playing in the video. Not the exact same one, but kind of same in concept. I will make a plastic sculpture using your carbon emissions saved by attending this workshop virtually. So scan this QR code with your phone. And that should take you to the Google spreadsheet that will allow you to enter what you've saved in carbon emissions. You're going to pretend that this workshop was actually hosted at CERN, and you can use Google Maps or there's a the Lavos 1.5 calculation tool. Any tool that you want. Put in your CO2 emissions in the column. In, I think, column G, I can't remember which column it is. Anyway, put it there. And then for every metric ton of carbon emissions saved, I will add 1 kilogram of upcycled plastic to this ginormous sculpture, hopefully, that I'm going to build. So, yeah, that is the participation component of this workshop. Sorry, it's a little rushed. I realize I kind of rambled for the earlier part of the presentation. Hopefully, okay, everyone scan this QR code. If not, I'm also going to put it in the chat. So, but before that,
I think dinner conference organizers also have this information.
yes, actually, but I think not everyone does it. So if you're doing it now and you haven't entered it already into the actual Indico page, you should do that because it's great that if we can get everyone to participate in that.
I'm
The
asking
one
just
with
so I
the
don't double count.
no, it's not getting double counted. This is actually this is like my personal Google Sheets, Google spreadsheet. So this is actually I wanted to have something separate from the whole Sustainable Hub conference because this would be the people who attended this workshop in particular.
And I remember in whichever calculator you use to click on the return
Click on
flight,
the what?
because otherwise you'll get only half of your contribution.
Ah, yeah, the return, right.
Yeah, we have seen this a lot in the registration form. Well, Saki, thank you very much. I think it was a great way to open people's eyes, realizing something as simple as realizing how much plastic it represents gives a physical dimension to what we're talking about. And although it may sound scary, that's maybe what we need. So I think it was great what you did, and it changed from the routine of our usual meetings where we just have talks, questions. People actually had to talk to each other. I've seen different approaches in the various breaking rooms. This is great, and it made this thing, although virtual because we're all sitting in our offices or at home, a bit more convivial. And I think it was a fantastic idea.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me and for trusting me to run a physics themed workshop, even though it's a little out of my field. And it was great meeting everyone. And even though I didn't talk directly to everyone, but seeing that you're working together in the breakout rooms, really cool. And yeah, send me an email if you want to, yeah, just like keep in touch. You have my website. It has my email on there. It's also just sakitheartist.com. I'm also Saki the Artist on Instagram. Send me a message there. And I'm also, yeah, open to more art collaborations. So if your institute is looking for an artist for some reason, hit me up.
Very
Perfect.
good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank
Right.
you. Thank you.
With that, I guess we're sort of on time still. So let's thank Saki again and move on to the next part of the conference today, which is going to be a panel discussion with some very prominent people from labs across the world. So if I can invite all the panelists to, if they're willing to switch on their cameras. Perfect. So yes, I'm gonna go ahead and introduce the panelists. Probably, I mean, it's if I s introduce them properly, it's gonna take the whole day. So I'm gonna be brief and let them speak about their labs themselves. So first off on the panelists, we have Professor Takayuki Saiki from KK, and he has been in Tokyo since like he obtained his PhD from Tokyo in 1996, and then eventually after several